Hey everybody, Ben Bailey here. Welcome to episode number one of Tall But True, where the stories might sound tall, but they are true.
Yeah, they're true-ish. They're pretty true.
I am Ben Bailey. I'm here with my good friend, Mr. DC Benny.
Hey everybody, what's happening?
And this is episode number one of Tall But True, inspired by a show that we used to do every Tuesday night live at this little club on Houston Street in the Village called Zinc Bar, which is now around the corner over on West 3rd Street. Still there, still a great place, still great jazz. Back then, it was jazz, like really good, top-notch, fun, great jazz music. Every night but Tuesday. Tuesday night was urban myth, and then it was great storytelling. Right? We would have a theme. Everybody that went on stage would tell a story based on that theme. And the best comics working around, everybody came in and did it. Everybody loved it. So this is basically that in podcast format. Because for me, Cash Cab came and went in my life, and then everything had changed. Before I got Cash Cab, everybody was trying to get a show. After Cash Cab was over, everybody had a show. It was their own podcast. And everybody was like, you got to do my podcast, man. You got to do my podcast. And I was like, okay, should I be doing a podcast? You know, but I didn't want to just do one just to do one. I wanted to be inspired. And then my old buddy, DC Benny, sitting across from me, and I got to talking about it. And we decided we were going to do something together. And then it was like, you know what, man, let's bring back the stories. Let's record those. Let's get those captured somewhere and bring back that vibe of a bunch of friends, good friends, sitting around telling stories, man. That's like one of my favorite things ever. So Tall But True is that. That's what it's supposed to be for all of us. So thanks for tuning in. Again, I'm Ben Bailey. I'm here with DC Benny. This is episode number one of Tall But True. Tonight's topic, New York stories, anything about New York City. And we have the perfect guest to lead off our guests here on episode one. He's a legendary New Yorker, a great guy, a good friend of mine that you would have seen on Remote Control, on Saturday Night Live. Tough crowd with him, as well as many other impressive credits like Crocodile Dundee Part 3. He's a legendary comic. He's a great guy. He's a great actor and a good friend to both of us. Good guy. Welcome to the show, guy. And by the way, I think he's on the street in New York City right now, which couldn't be more perfect. I think we've got him on the line. It's Mr. Colin Quinn. Colin, are you there, buddy?
Hey.
There he is.
What's happening,
Colin Quinn? Oh, my God.
What's up, buddy?
What's going on, Mr. Quinn?
Well, I'm in Tribeca, where I live now, and I was actually a great prophet about the neighborhood. My friend used to work at Battery Park when they were putting up the first building in 1981.
Right.
And back then, he goes, people are going to move here. I go, that's so stupid. No one's going to live in this neighborhood. It's the worst. Right before Battery Park was built.
Yeah, it's such a nice neighborhood.
Oh, my God.
I actually lived down there for a while, like right after it kind of like started to become a nice place. I got lucky. I got a one bedroom down there. It was so nice and quiet, man. I felt like I was out of the city, but you're in the city.
I know. Well, now Battery Park City, forget about it. It's like you might as well be in like a gated community in Virginia. It's nothing like New York.
There's a fat guy in a booth.
And I used to, yeah.
Who are you coming
and
to
I
see?
I used to be... I used to bartend at the old World Trade Center behind
no way.
Me.
Where, down?
Yeah, I was
up top? Up in the...
No, in the bottom.
Oh,
at
downstairs.
The Trade Inn. It was in the basement of the Port Authority. The Trade Inn Bar. Yeah, speaking of New York landmarks that closed, New York Dolls closed the other day. See it behind my head? New York Dolls.
Oh, yeah.
That was a famous place here for 20
years. You walked around the block pretending that's not where you just came from.
It closed. It closed the other day forever. It's
oh,
a
no,
landmark.
It's
now gone. But
that's bad news. Sorry, listeners. Bad news. New York Dolls. Legendary.
New York Dolls. I'm in front of the clothes club. I'm in front of the gentlemen's club. Closed gentlemen's club. So so it goes like this. Right. Oh, so the first time I decided to stand up, but I was still drinking. So one night I wake up literally in the gutter. Right there. Right. In the gutter.
Are we on location where this happened? Right now in front of New York Dodgers?
Jesus, hold on.
Siren. Dude, this couldn't be more perfect New York story. You're actually... We have to wait for the police. Holding for sirens.
Jesus, they're going right on the corner. Like, unbelievable.
What's going on?
Anyway,
is that something
one night
to worry about?
I'll go around the corner. Here, I'm at the closed pizza place. I think they're doing a little developing here. Everything's closed. So he goes, hey, man. So he goes, so I decided I'm going to do comedy. So I go to the improv. They used to give out numbers. Right. Improv says it's a two-hour. Numbers don't come out till like 2 o'clock, at like 12 o'clock. I go to a bar around the corner. Then I'm all, you know, drunk in like an hour. It's like Smith's Bar and Grill, which is still there. And then I go, I'm going to go buy some Coke or Speed so I can stay awake. So I go to 42nd Street, you know, even though I know better. But yeah. I go, hey, any Speed? The guy goes, I got Procaine. Procaine was like yellow fake Coke in the 80s, early 80s. Called Procaine. I swear to God.
What was it really? It was cut with something?
Yeah, but people would actually go, oh, all right, Procaine. People would actually buy it. It wasn't considered fake. It was just semi, I don't know why it was okay, but whatever. It was like a numbing agent. But anyway.
People who know 42nd Street how it is now are like, what is he talking about?
Yeah, 42nd Street.
For drugs on 42nd Street? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, like 43rd and 8th, 42nd. It was like a drug. It was a den of inequity. You could do, there was drugs. It was like you could have somebody beat up, kill. You know, it was like a hellhole, you know.
And it was, you were like, running the neighborhood at that time, weren't you?
I acted like I was. I walked around like as if I was king of the court. And so I walk around. So I go, I want to try this first, to Procaine, the dealer. So we go in a...
Because you're
hallway.
Drunk and you're trying to stay up just to keep up. You're drunk.
So I can do my comedy
dream. So you can do your stand-up set.
My dream.
You signed up for. Yeah, you can start this dream. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I go, exactly. So it's only 2 in the afternoon on a Sunday, by the way. So so it's matinee time, which is, you know, even in those days, the matinee was still semi-respectable. We go in this hallway, right?
Right.
Go in the hallway.
Wait, who's we? You and...
Me and the kid that's going to sell me the Procaine because I want to test it first.
Right.
I'm nobody's fool.
Right. Absolutely
so
not.
It's basically like
Does
this
he
behind...
Have a name? Do you remember that guy's name?
No. Okay. Of course not. Okay. You know, but here it is. Ready? So like this building behind me, it's like this. Only just imagine a little doorway. We walk in.
Right.
Go in there. He breaks open the bag. Two Irish guys with beards come in. You know? So it's obviously, you know, cops, mid-20s, you know, and they like, hey, they grab us, throw us, cuff us, you know, put us in. I'm like, what's the matter with you? I'm like, outraged, cursing, you know. They put us on they put us on one of those, you know, like those chain gangs, right, in Times Square, because it's a sweep for the afternoon, you know.
Right.
The city was a sweep. Well, literally one of those chain. Like, you ever see the Woody Allen movie, Take Your Money Run? When he's on the chain? It's like that, only me is the only white guy. You know, and we're in the middle of Times Square, like after 6-7.
So like arrested, and they like they're putting you to work.
No, they don't. I mean, like
they're
we're chained up.
Like, all to each other.
Yeah, they cuff us all, and we're like walking down, leading us down 42nd Street, or on this tape.
Okay.
Literally, us and the other guys swept their guys, so everybody gets swept together, and they lead us to the substation on 42nd and Broadway. So then we get there. A couple hours passes by. I'm cursing. I'm going to miss my audition. You know what I mean?
Right.
At the improv.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's what
this is all. I promise you, this is how it happened. I swear to God.
I totally
so
agree.
Goes,
I'm sorry. I'm a little distracted. I'm trying to get DC's audio right, but I think we're good. So go ahead, dude. Go ahead. This is an amazing story.
So then I'm in there, and I'm going, let me go. So they keep bringing in more and more guys. There's like 40 guys in there, like the 20 cops, 40 guys. And a little substation is still there right in Times Square right now. You know, you see the NYPD thing right next to the recruiting thing.
Right.
So I'm going, hey, man, I have a show. I'm a comedian. I keep telling them I'm a comedian. You know, I never did comedy. But I'm like, I'm a comedian. You know, mad, you know, outraged, drunk, but like starting to get hung over, like really in a bad mood.
God, so the guy, I wish I knew you.
The guy goes, "You're a comedian? Why don't you do your act?"
Oh, no.
Right? Says, "Do your act." All right. I get up. It's 40 guys cuffed, about 15 cops, in that little substation in Times Square. You can still see it.
Right.
And it was a little, like, I don't know if it was a platform. I don't know if it was a desk. I don't remember. But I feel like it was like a platform, but probably a desk. I get up, and everybody's, you know, respecting the nerve, like any comedian, even though I hadn't done it yet. Yeah, you know, I'm not going to turn down the spot. I'm not going to turn down the spot. I can do it. What's up, man? How you doing? Yeah, but I'm on a FaceTime thing. Ready? Here, we'll do it. Here, Meta. I'm only going to punch on my story right now.
Who's this guy? Did he get heckled? Who is this guy?
Ben was in a hoy. You know, Ben Bailey from Cash Cab.
Oh, yeah,
that's
dude.
Him right here.
Dude, what are you doing?
I'm on FaceTime.
I'm doing an interview.
I know.
Colin, who is this guy?
Ready?
It's right at the height of this amazing story.
I know. So, we're right there.
That was classic, dude.
My biggest fan.
Right? Just to reiterate for everyone who's listening or anyone who might have just tuned in here, Colin is like, was planning to go and do, is your first ever stand-up show, right?
Yes.
He has to wait to see if he got picked, so he goes and has a few drinks. Then he goes and scores some procaine. Then he gets arrested. Now he's
right.
In a holding cell with like 40 dudes and 20 cops.
Yeah.
The guys have all been arrested too, obviously, for one thing or another.
Yeah, they're all like dealers and stuff, you know, Times Square robbers.
And
so
he's
then
singing for his supper, man. They're making him do stand-up.
I'm yelling at the cops saying, "Let me go, because I'm a stand-up comedian. You're ruining my show. I have to go pick a number." I didn't even have a spot. I was just trying to get a number, you know. So anyway, the cop goes, "Let's see you stand. Let's see your jokes, whatever." I go, "All right." I get up there, no mic, you know, stand up on whatever it was. I don't remember, it was a table, a platform, a chair. I get up and I start doing my jokes, which at the time, God only knows how just the opposite of the tumultuous situation. Just probably the most tepid, you know, people probably think it was like, oh, some wild joke. It was probably the most banal jokes you can imagine. Like, just, you know, I don't remember, but I'm sure it was just boring.
Oh,
you know?
Do you remember any of it at all?
Yeah, well, I remember. I used to do one joke where I'd go, I know a lot of people think, hey, I'm from Brooklyn. You know, this guy's from Brooklyn. He must have gold chains and, like, you know, listen to disco. And I go, that's just a stereotype about Brooklyn. Brooklyn's not like that. That's Staten Island.
Oh, that's good, man.
That was a real zinger.
I love your bits, dude. And I love that story. That's insane.
No, wait. I'm not done.
Oh, no, there's more.
The punchline was actually that I get up and I do a couple of minutes of jokes.
Right.
In front of the whole crowd of all these people.
Right in the holding cell.
When I tell you, even through my drug and alcohol addled thing, I knew I was bombing and bombing big. and you know the brothers, they're not exactly like, oh man, that's corny, oh man. And the cops are sitting there looking. I get up after a couple of minutes just pissed off, and one of the cops goes, "Well, we were gonna let you go, you just said you were a comedian, but now we know you were lying."
Oh, my God, that's the greatest heckle of all time.
Wasn't that great? He really got it. And he waited until I was, like, sitting back down. You know what I mean? The whole place is kind of quiet. Like, it wasn't even it was the line delivered by, like, that sarcastic, like, Irish monotone that he had. But it was also that he waited until everybody was just like, all right, that's over. And he goes, "Well, we were going to let you go because you said you were a comedian, but now we know you were lying."
That's amazing. I couldn't have asked for a better story to lead off this thing, man.
Oh, man.
I'm so thankful that you were able to do it, man. And it's great to see
thanks.
You. Everyone else can see you except us. Like, it's only audio on the show, but it's nice to see your face, man. I hope you're good. Do you have to go, or do you have...
That's sad, because here I was trying to get visuals of all the New York stuff. I showed
He's
the
got
curb.
Interviews, buddy.
I showed New York Dolls clothes. I was really trying to give, like, the flavor to...
I couldn't... Well, I couldn't bring myself to tell you, like, oh, no one can see you, but...
But you look good. You got a pert mouth.
All right, I gotta go.
Dude, it was so great. You want to plug a gig or something? It's like late November, December. You got something?
No, not really. Just a Fat Black Pussycat I'll be doing,
Fat
I
Black
guess.
Fat Black Pussycat. And what's the name of the show?
I don't know. I think it's called Bully.
Bully, okay.
Awesome.
Yeah. Awesome. You guys got to go see Colin Quinn. He's hilarious. He's a legend.
The funniest.
Thanks so much, man.
The funniest.
We'll see you soon.
Bye, guys.
All right, be good, man.
Take care, brother.
Bye.
Bye.
Unbelievable. What a great way to kick it off with a really awesome story, revealing and awesome story from Mr. Colin Quinn. We'll be right back with another great story, Tall But True.
All right, we're back.
That was hilarious.
What an insanely awesome story from Colin Quinn. And how incredibly funny that he thought he was on video the whole time.
So yeah.
He was like doing all this visual stuff.
Yeah, well, he was very visual. There's a lot of,
he was showing the strip club behind him.
The back, yeah.
The building. Here's where I was laying in the gutter. Like, Quinn, no one can see. What a great way to start the show. What a perfect New York story. Let's get on. Let's do your New York story, man. Are you ready with yours?
Yeah, I'll do my New York story. I moved here, I think it was like 92, right? And I lived in the Bronx for a while. I lived in I literally had that experience where, I was looking at this building. It's like, and it was like fucking Haiti. I mean, it's like trash cans are burning, whatever. This dude comes up, man, what size shoe? You about a 12, right? That kind of, and I'm like, ah, and my buddy who's moving, he's like, man, you cannot move to this neighborhood. Man, what size shoe you, man? And, yeah, I don't know. I ended up living in the Bronx a while, but I was like, I got to get to Manhattan to do, I want to be living in Manhattan doing comedy. So this is I feel like it's 90, 92, something like that. So at the time, I was a male model. I had gotten signed by this modeling agency and I was doing that. And I went to them.
Awesome.
Yeah, well, yeah. I know. I don't know what that.
You're talking about you and that you're a male.
Dude.
Everyone always does that. That's one of those things.
It's just one because, you got to.
He was a male model.
Yeah, I wasn't a she-male. I know that.
Nowadays, it's hard to tell what's going on. But so you're a model, dude. That's awesome.
And, it was getting a little change during the day or whatever. But I needed a place in the city because I was coming down from the Bronx. And, so I asked the lady, and she's like, well, there's this dude. He's a stylist. You could move in with him, right? And she's like, I'm going to let you know now, this guy's a flaming queen, right? And I'm like, well, I don't care. I mean, I don't care. And she's like, all right. So I go meet the guy. And there was Kaufman Surplus in Times Square, which is across from the Port Authority. And then there was an alley and there was Show World, which Show World was like nasty strip club.
Yeah.
I mean, it was
which
just nasty.
Club.
Yeah, later became for a little while Laugh Factory, and some other,
Before that, it was Show World. There was like 27 rooms.
Oh, they had the booze. You put a dollar in or something. The window comes up. You don't want to touch anything. There's like a roll of toilet paper in there. It was horrific, right? Just horrific, So I go meet this guy, and he's like, yeah, I need a roommate. $400 a month. So I'm like, all right, that was good even back then. We split the apartment, and it's a what do you call
a
railroad apartment, right? So it's basically a hallway with doors. You eat here, you pee there, you sleep. There's no feng shui, any of that stuff.
The train runs right through the living room.
Yeah. So I'm like, we meet and I'm like, okay, this will be cool. And he's like, listen, I just want to let you know that I'm gay. I was like, I just want to let you know that I'm not, in case you sleepwalk one night, ass is a midnight snack, whatever. And it was great. We move in, everything was cool. But the super of the building thought we were together and he lived across the hall and the super was really religious, the superintendent. And so like I'd come out and he'd be like, that lifestyle is wrong. He'd be like, that lifestyle is against Jesus. And I'm like, what are you talking about? At first I didn't know what he's talking about. He's like, that lifestyle, a man shall not lay with another man. I'm like, and then I was like, dude, it's not like that. But he would just close the door. Right. I'm like, we're just roommates, man. So, and it's
Three's Company.
Oh, dude, it was, yeah, but it, yeah.
Twos.
So I'm there, and my roommate would get there used to be a show called The Robin Bird Show.
Oh, yeah. I remember The Robin Bird
Show. The Robin Bird Show was like a cable access show.
Cable access, naked people.
She was an ex-porn star. She looked like Barry Manilow a little bit, you know.
And she between Barry Manilow and Barry Katz.
Yeah, hey, man. You're on fire.
You're on fire.
Take this antibiotic, man. So, basically...
fuck you,
Andy. Hey, man, how'd that feel? So, basically... The Robin Bird Show, what you could do is you could, they had the dancers, the new dancers on the show that were also escorts, and you could order them.
Right.
And
you could order them off the TV.
You'd order them off the TV. That was the old, like, Craigslist, basically.
Yeah.
So he would, my roommate would order, like, there'd be a guy dancing, and then he'd call the number, and then he'd be like, you know, you need to go see a movie or something. So as I'm leaving, the dude would be there, like, in a construction helmet. You Jack? And I'm like, nah, he's inside. And I'm like, go see a movie. You know, that was just the ritual. Like, there's, so.
That dude that was, like, a regular.
It was pretty regular, you know. So I'd get kicked out, and my roommate would get busy. And then, you know, and during that time, you know, he's doing that. Well, my futon's in the. Like, you walk in, there's the kitchen, there's kind of a living room area, there's my futon, and his bedroom's way in the back. So one night, I'm laying in the futon. All the apartments look the same, and my roommate never locked the door. I mean, it was Times Square. You got to lock the door, never locked the door. So I'm sleeping the futon, right? And the door opens, right? I hear this. Door opens, this drunk dude comes in, starts taking off his clothes. And I'm like, what are you doing? And he's like, shh, don't worry about it. I live here. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? You don't live here? He's like, dude, I live here, right? And he's got his pants off. I'm like, man. And my roommate's like, what's going on? I'm like, this guy's in here with no pants. You know, he's like, well, throw him out. I'm like, thanks for the help. So I grab the guy. I throw him in the hallway. I hand him his pants. As I'm handing his pants, the super opens the door, sees me handing him his pants. He's like, the lifestyle is messed up. You know, you're going to hell, right? So, you know, now it's solidified that this guy thinks I'm getting, you know, I'm banging dudes in my, you know, we got a menage a trois going on. So in the meantime.
You're like, it's not me. It's just the other guy. Of course.
I'm handing him his corduroys, you know, in the middle of the night. That looks real authentic, right?
He's like the village people right here.
So,
one at a time this afternoon.
In the meantime, I got no money. The modeling stuff, the agent disappeared. Like, so I got no money or whatever. So I got to get a job or whatever. So I'm looking for stuff. So my roommate, he keeps coming back. He'll bring an ad out of the Village Voice for some job. So he comes back one day, and on my futon, there's smoke pot for money. I'm like, you know, I could definitely do that, right? I could definitely do that. So it's like you go and it's like they'll do some kind of experiment or something at NYU or something like that. So I get baked on the way to the thing.
Right.
And as I'm walking, I get really paranoid. I'm like, man, this is going to be a setup. I'm going to get there. It's going to be like dudes in lab coats like, here he is. You know, and then, you know, the cops are going to come. But so I never even make it. I get way late at a Mrs. Fields or something, eating cookies. I never even make it. So I come home one day and on the futon, he's ripped out. It says sperm donor, $500 per donation. And, you know, I had no girlfriend at the time. So, I mean, I'm like, I just blew a grand last night. You know, I mean, I'm beating my dick. Like, so I'm like, I could do this. This I could definitely do.
Wait, what happened? I'm sorry, dude. With the weed.
And I never even made it. I got paranoid. I never made it to the interview.
Like,
nah, I was like, I'm like, it's a setup, you know, it's a setup. We even smoke pot for money. It's too good. Yeah.
Oh, that's a shame. I was really curious about what.
Yeah, that never really panned out, you know.
So then you're like.
But then I saw the sperm donor thing. Yeah, I could definitely do that. And I'm like, that's not illegal unless, you know, you're on the subway or something. And so I'm like, I'm going to go. So I wear a suit to this interview. I call up and it's this clinic and I wear a suit. I'll never forget it, like my executive jerkaholic look. And I come in and I, you know, I'm like, hey, I'm Benny, trying to shake the lady's hand. She's like, just sit down, you know, and shake hands or whatever. And she's asking me all these questions and you fill out this thing and you take a blood test. And if the blood test is all good, then you come back for the actual, to donate the sample, right?
Right.
So I get a call. Yeah, and they're like,
it's
got to
be healthy.
Yeah, I don't know. They don't know what they're doing. They want to find you guys, you know, the TB or something, whatever. So I get
some
a call.
Crackhead coming in.
And she's like, the blood is Colin.
Oh, no.
But the blood's good. She's like, the blood's good. Let's make an appointment. It's at another clinic, and you go there. And she's like, now you can't ejaculate for I think it was 5 days before, some long period of time. Yeah, I'm like, damn, you know, I was like, dude, I was like 23, you know.
23 years old.
But I'm like, this could be a viable source of income. $500, this could be. So I'm like, I want to make an impression. So I'm like saving it up. You know, I'm watching a porn, you know, beat my dick a couple of times and then stop, you know. And what? So by the time the day comes, oh, dude, by the time it was brutal. I said brutal. That's really what it was.
Dude, that's Freudian. It was beautiful. It was.
Well, I show up to this clinic, right, and it's really awkward because you go from one room to the next room and to this last room. And in the last room, there's two other dudes in there, right? And it was like—
In the same room?
In the same— It was a waiting area. So they got magazines, like fishing magazines and stuff like that.
You're
and,
supposed you know, to just take care of business
right. No, you're waiting, and then they're going to— You're going to go, so, you know, you're going to go— You'll be up at deck. So you'll
right,
be at
like
bat.
A dumb, I'm playing.
No, it's good. I got to explain this a little better. I think a lot of— I thought a lot— It's like a lot of people have done this, right? So we're waiting, and it's really awkward because we all know what we're there. No one's there for a sore throat, you know, or, you know, whatever, in the clinic. You know, I got a headache. And we're all sitting. I can't even look at these guys. And there's like a chubby guy, and then there's this guy that I think is Iranian or something. He's got this one eyebrow, and he's got a glove on. I know he has one glove. He's wearing a glove. Just, well, that's what it's so funny. I'm like, this guy's like the Mario Andretti of jerking off or something. He's got this fingerless glove thing.
It's like makes me think of a Tales bit, the Jean-Claude Van Hand.
Right. it was like that. It was like that. He's got the, you know, one big arm, you know, and he's sitting there and he's like flexing his fingers. He's flexing his fingers, man.
One huge muscular arm. Yeah. The other one's just dangling.
It's all dried out like a turkey leg or whatever.
He's like the arm wrestler in that Far Side.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Dried arm under the table.
But, dude, it was so— – I got intimidated, you know, because I'm like— – up to that point, I'm like, I stored everything up. I'm ready to go. I mean, I'm gonna blow out the bathroom window when I'm in there. But this guy, you know, he's got the— – so the nurse comes out, and she gives me a vial, like this vial, and she's like, you go in that bathroom— – and you take care of the business, and then you bring it out, and you've got to keep it warm, room temperature, because otherwise it's no good, right? So I go in the bathroom, and I've never done this like in that kind of— I mean, at home, I've done it at home. I'm not one of those dudes that does that. But so it's like I'm in the bathroom. I got to do it to the imagination, right? There's no, you know, there's all the— and it's a clinic, so it's like Dr. Iceberg, Feinberg, Goldberg, please come different, you know, and it's like. His Puerto Rican family keeps trying to get into the bathroom. This guy's like, "Me not trying to get it." So I'm like, "Go away!" You know, trying to jerk off. So finally, I open the door. And I get the nurse guy. I'm like, "Look, I need some material." So she gives me— she's like, "The last guy who's here, you know, stole everything. Let me see what I can find." She gives me a J. Crew catalog. So I'm sitting there, like, trying to imagine what this girl looks like without. And it's a winter one, so she's got, you know, the wool knit sweater and everything. So it's just too much. I can't do it. So I tell the nurse, I'm like, listen, can I just do this at home? She's like, you can do it at home. But then when you have the vial, you put it in your pants waistline and keep it to your body so it'll keep it body, you know, body temperature and everything. Don't let it not get room temperature. I'm like, all right. So I go home, right? I set up the bathroom. I got my, you know, this is back in the day of magazines or whatever. So I got all my, you know, my favorite, you know. It's like, you know, the menage a trois with the Asian chick, the black chick, and the blonde, you know. And I'm in the bathroom.
Anything you want. Anything you want.
And while I'm in there, my roommate comes home, right? And he's got one of those Robin Bird dudes. So the wall is very thin, and they're very vocal, right? Oh, so I'm hearing all this, you know, smack my ass, call me Shirley, you know, who's the daddy, me, you, I don't know, somebody. And... you know, and I just feel like, am I gay by default that I'm sitting here?
I don't think I could do it.
I did it, bro.
That same, like, wow, this is too weird. I pulled it off,
man. I had one ear covered and then the dick in the other hand. And, you know, like, mushed against, oh, dude.
You pulled it off.
I pulled it off. I came busting out of the bathroom, right? And, you know, they see me. But it's like they don't know what just transpired. I'll never forget. I run downstairs. I got the vial, right? I got the vial. And this is the worst lie I've ever told because I get downstairs. I got the vial. the front door opens and it's the super from the building, right? Of course. And he takes a look at me and he takes a look at the vial and he's like, "What's that?" And I looked at him. I'm like, "It's not sperm." And I just ran outside to the clinic. And that's how I made my first $500 in New York. That's a horrible story, dude. It's not sperm. It's not sperm. Yeah, that was all I could think of, man.
Dude, what a great story.
Well,
when you took it back and you made the $500,
I got. I never did that again, though. That was like way too much, man. That's, I don't recommend that. You know, in retrospect, for the youth of today.
I never did. Yeah. I never went that route trying to make money. I have to be honest. I used to work people over with Sloan Shock.
Sure. Named Colin.
What's the worst thing I ever did to make money? And the answer is clearly stand-up comedy.
Yeah. Yeah, really. I mean, you talk about prostituting yourself.
Most
I mean, that's...
I never bored myself was being a comedian. Story left, and that's mine. And,
oh, yeah.
We'll be back to share that with you in just a minute.
Oh, yeah.
All right, we're off to a great start. Episode one of Tall But True. Where
yes, indeed.
The tales sound tall, but they are true. True-ish.
Now, you got a... Yeah, they're true-ish. I'm not going to say we don't.
I was racking my brain trying to figure out a great New York story. I have so many New York stories. But I was thinking about this one, which goes back to one of the first times that I ever even went into New York City. When I was like... I guess I was like 15 or 16. I lived out here in the suburbs.
In Jersey.
In Jersey, not too far from where we right now sit, in the town of Chatham, New Jersey. And I think I was about 15, and some of the other kids and I in the neighborhood had started like building forts and stuff in the backyard when we were a little bit younger. And then by the time we were 15, I had built, with my father's help, a shed / fort that had like a barn roof that matched the house.
Like a treehouse downstairs, sort of?
It looked like a tool shed. You would have thought it was a garden shed. But it wasn't. It was my fort. I basically had a little house in the backyard.
Only Bailey has a serious fort.
I know, totally right? It's such a me thing. Yeah. I didn't even realize that so much until I'm just telling you about it. I'm like,
waterproof
know what
roof?
You're thinking about it. So we had this awesome fort, which had bunk beds in it. I had a beanbag chair. I had a little table. You know, we would bring drinks, sodas, whatever out there. So, and then eventually, when we got a little bit older, obviously we started sneaking booze. We'd sneak some beers in there.
Put a chicken.
I accidentally discovered beer. We were hanging out in the foundation of this new house. It was not yet, you know, it was under construction. We're down there. We used to go down there and like, throw rocks and like, get into all sorts of mischief and shit. We found a 12-pack of Michelob. We were like 13. And we broke like 6 of them before we realized we could be drinking them.
Oh! Smashing
them against the wall. They're like, wait a minute.
Well, it was Michelob, but yeah.
Yeah, right. So we each drank like half of one. And we're like, oh my God! We went crazy. Anyway, so... After that, we would try to somehow find out a way to get beers and whatever. We would hang out in this shed of mine. We'd sleep out there and have my buddy sleep over, and we'd go out in the shed and we'd get into all sorts of stuff. So as we got older and older, it became worse and worse what we tried to do in there. So by the time we were like juniors in high school or sophomores in high school maybe, or freshmen, geez, I can't remember my own life that well now. Yeah. but we were like, you know, inviting girls to come back. Like, that, you guys come over.
When you said bunk bed, that's what, you know, or bed, you know, that's the key bed alcohol.
So one night, my buddy Chris and I, we've got a plan. We got these two girls are going to come and hang out with us in my fort.
Yeah.
Which is now, at that point, been nicknamed the toaster. Because we get toasted in there.
That's awesome, dude. So, I love that.
We got these girls coming over, and we don't know what we're going to do. And this is all under the radar. Nobody's parents know about any of it. So I basically lie to my parents and tell them that I'm going to over to Chris's house. He says that he's going over to our house, to my house. This is in the afternoon, like 4. And we go and we get on a train into New York City. We've maybe been there twice between us on our own, if at all. And we go in and we look, all we want to do is get booze. We don't know how to get booze, but we want to have booze because we want to be able to give the girls something to drink and impress them. And, you know, everybody gets a little tipsy and maybe we'll make out. So we get on a train, we go into the city and we walk from the 9th Street PATH station all the way across Washington Square Park. And we go around, we end up over on Bleecker Street. I didn't know where it was then,
yeah.
But now I know.
Yeah.
And we go to this little deli that's owned by this Asian couple. And we've got a hockey bag. We have a hockey equipment bag. You've seen those bags.
Oh, yeah.
Giant bag.
You can put a body in that thing.
We load it to the hilt. We pack wine coolers. We have drink orders from the girls. We have wine coolers to get. We got beers for him.
For the toaster.
For me. And we're like, well, when are we going to do this again? We might as well get more beers. We load it so full that we can hardly carry the thing. And this, but, you know, so it's like, you know, a case and a half.
Yeah.
Of beverages. And of different kinds. And I think we paid like $100 for it, you know, the Asian couple. Like,
right.
Give us all the money, yeah, yeah. You silly little white boys.
Some free gum.
So we load it so full that neither of us can carry it for very long before we have to put it down and take a rest. We carried it all the way back down to Washington Square Park.
You greedy bastards.
Filled with bottles of booze. And you're 15, 14. And it's rattling like crazy. Like, you would obviously know if you saw us or walk by you. You're like, there are two 15-year-old boys from New Jersey carrying a hockey bag full of beer back to their tent. So we struggle. We finally get to the south side of Washington Square Park. We take a break. We carry it together, like, most of the way across the park. We go down, we go over to 6th Avenue, we go up and around, and circle up to the 9th Street station, we get it in, and we get down to the platform. And it's the middle of the day on a weekday, and there's nobody in there except this one other dude, and he is a crazy homeless man. And he is pulling his pants up the whole time, and two of us are sitting there, we have this giant bag of booze.
He didn't sniff it?
He didn't sniff the bag. He was walking back and forth. He's this giant, wiry, muscular dude. And he's walking back and forth and pulling his pants up so high. I mean, they're already like as high as they can go. But he just keeps cranking them up like he wants to get them over his friggin' head, you know?
And they fall back down.
And he's just singing. I can't remember what he was saying, but he's saying something over and over and over. No, they're never falling back down. He's just obsessively pulling them like almost up to his chest. And they're like these loose, baggy, like crazy wearing pants. And he's walking back and forth, and he's saying stuff, and the two of us are terrified of this man. We're 15. We've never been in New York City before.
You can't run. You got the bag.
We can't do anything. We're scared to death of this guy. But we're also trying, because we're scared to death of him, we're trying so hard not to laugh at this dude. But he's doing the most hilarious shit. He's walking back and forth, repeating some phrase over and over, and he's hiking his pants up constantly.
Where's my belt?
It was some words to some song.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish I could remember. But so we're sitting there trying not to laugh, and then finally we can't take it. We look at each other, and it's over, and we just explode laughing. The two of us start laughing so hard that this dude stops and looks at us, and I felt like I was at the zoo, and an ostrich looked my way. Like, we were just like, oh, and we froze. This dude's looking at us, and so he starts coming over to us, and he's bobbing his head like a bird and pulling his pants up, and he comes right over to us. He's leaning in, and he's looking at us. And he's just looking. He's like 6 inches away from my face, looking me right in the eye. And I'm frozen. I can't move. I can't do anything. I'm so scared. And I look over at my friend, and he's red in the face. He's laughing so hard that he's crying. But he's trying. He's still trying not to. And then the guy slowly moves, and he's not looking at him. He's staring him right in the face, and I'm laughing. Then pretty soon the two of us are laughing. The guy starts laughing. Now the three of us are just laughing hysterically in this PATH station at 9th Street. And then the dude looks over slowly, and he sees the hockey bag. And he looks at the hockey bag, and then that was a great reaction, by the way. he looks at the bag, and he looks at us, And he looks at the bag, and he looks at us, and I realize he's looking at my T-shirt. And I look down, and I'm the reason we have a hockey bag. I play hockey, right? I'm wearing a T-shirt that says, like, Essex County Hockey whatever. Even though I lived in Morris County, I went to camp or something. I got an Essex County Hockey Camp shirt.
Chances are the guy's not going to get the distinction, you
but
know?
He of the two counties? Yeah. Definitely not of the two counties. But he knows that it's hockey. It's got uh-huh. hockey sticks on it. And he sees the hockey bag. And he just, like, completely changes into, like, a normal, rational dude for a second. And then he just goes, where were you playing hockey today? It's the middle of the summer. And we're like, what the fuck? And I don't even know what to say. And before I can even answer, he just, like, goes back to his crazy guy self and like, struts away, right? The train comes. We muscle the huge bag of beer onto the train. We take the train all the way back to Chatham, New Jersey, suburban, you know, secluded little privileged town that Chatham is. I love Chatham. Don't take it the wrong way, Chatham people. And now we've got this huge bag. Now we've got the real hard part. We've got to get it from the train station
to the toaster,
all the way, like, 2.5-3 miles away to my house.
Oof.
And it's full of booze. My buddy goes, oh, dude, don't worry about it. I'll just call my mom. She'll give us a ride. I'm like, dude, we have all this booze.
He likes rolling the dice.
Dude, and he goes, don't worry about it. She won't ask. She won't notice. She won't think about it. She'll just pick us up. I'm like, are you sure? He's like, I'm 100% sure. So we go to a payphone, and he calls his mom. And sure enough, she just pulls up. We load this hockey bag filled with booze into the trunk of her car, and she drives us back to, you know, my parents' house.
You hit any bumps?
We hit some bumps. We put it in the trunk, though.
Ah.
So we were like, oh, we need to put this in the trunk.
Yeah.
She was like, okay.
Fragile hockey equipment.
Super sweet, just to, like, taking care of the kids, you know, driving us around. We take it back to my house. We put it out in the shed. We even, like, get ice, and we've got it cool. Honestly, I can't remember what happened with the girls. I think the night went off without a hitch. Like, they showed up. We each had, like, half a drink. And then we, like, kissed and whatever. And it was a great night. But so the craziest part of the whole thing is that years go by. Years and years go by from then. I'm going into New York to do stand-up for one of the first times. I take the train in for some reason. I didn't have a car. Take the train in. I'm coming out of the freaking PATH station at 9th Street, 6th Avenue. There's the dude.
The pants guy.
The pants guy is outside the PATH station. And I walk up to him, and as I'm walking by him, I look at him. He looks at me, and he goes, he points at me, and he goes, this dude looks at me and goes, dude plays hockey in the summertime.
Oh, that's awesome.
Dude,
that is awesome.
Isn't that crazy?
You get the Goodwill Hunting guy, you know, that can do the math. It's so funny, man.
Just like, I look totally different, but he remembered that, man.
Wow.
That same trip into the city, I really got a taste of New York. I was standing on the corner with my buddy Chris and all the booze, just another little side thing, and then we got to go in and wrap up episode one here. We're standing, we get to 6th Avenue and 8th Street, and we're standing on the corner there, and I see this old couple, this is on the way in, so I'm like literally in New York on my own for the first time ever.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh my God, this is amazing, so crazy, look at all these people, and I see this old couple getting ready to cross 6th Avenue, and this old guy is stepping out ahead of the woman, and she goes, and she puts her hand on his arm and goes, be careful, wait, be careful. And I'm like, oh, this is a sweet moment, you know.
Yeah, it's touching.
Sweet moment, she's looking out for her man. And the dude turns around and goes, will you shut the fuck up?
I love this city.
I was like, oh my God, what is this
Where's
place?
Meg Ryan?
This is so different from anything I've ever seen. That's totally acceptable. Nobody's even questioning.
Okay.
Shut the fuck up. Well, dude, I think it's been beautiful. An awesome episode.
That was fun, man. That was fun. I love that story, dude.
Benny, I love Colin Quinn's story. Thanks to him for coming on the show. Dude, do you have any dates you want to plug? Late November.
December, I got something coming. I'm in Montreal sometime in November.
Oh, nice.
And then
The Comedy Nest.
Yeah.
All right, The Comedy Nest sometime in November.
Yeah, sometime in November. I got to look it up, bro. There's something in December in Texas. I got to find that, too. Next show, I'm going to be more prepared with these dates.
I am probably going to be in New York, mostly for the next 6 weeks or so, which is second half of November and most of December.
Yeah.
If I do end up putting some in there, something else in there, I will be sure to let everybody know. And so that's it, guys. Thank you so much for listening to episode one.
Episode one, man.
If you enjoyed it, come back. There will be more.
Yes, indeed. Bye-bye.